Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go at a minute past the hour on this, the 12th day of June, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. This program's live. The boss said we don't need to leave until in the morning. That was her preference. And if it is her pleasure, it is my duty to hear and obey. So consequently, there will be no program tomorrow evening. Let's put it this way. There's probably a bajillion cases scheduled for 1 o'clock on the docket tomorrow, which means it may be a miracle if we're out of there by 6 p.m. at all. But nonetheless, if we are, if it's just boom, 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 dun, 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 in and out, then I'll be back on the air tomorrow evening. But I would say it's not a very high likelihood at all. I wouldn't run off and bet the farm on it. So, what does that mean for this week? That means no program tomorrow. That means program prayer meeting Wednesday, thorn in the side Thursday. I heard from our dear friends Mike and Kathy Malloy over the weekend. It looks like Friday will be a fill-in evening, filling in for Mike and Kathy. So that means Friday on the front porch will be truncated. What we'll do is we'll get started at 6 o'clock on Friday and pretty much just open up the front porch immediately so that we can have a couple of hours of good conversation. Then knock off at 8 p.m. like I do on the nights when I fill in for Mike and Kathy. Knock off at 8 p.m., retool, reset, reboot, and fire up the Malloy campfire at 9 p.m. So that's pretty much the schedule this week. And the usual stuff applies. Let's see here. What did I do this weekend? Why, I'm glad you asked, even though you didn't. I spent the weekend with a weed eater and a whole bunch of computer parts. Building the Fab machine. That's what it's going to be. Fab is the kind sponsor of the new production computer, so consequently, it will be known as the Fab machine. And it is fab indeed. This thing has ideas before I do. It knows what I'm thinking, but oh my God, it's fast. So I spent the weekend building that, and we are very, very nearly done. Nothing works out entirely perfect. We had one DOA component, but apart from that, it's running magnificently. Wow, is it cool? I mean, it's just cool. And so there will be the long process of transferring a whole bunch of data over. That's probably next weekend now. So that's where that stands. The other part of the weekend was spent working on the acre. God's happy little acre. Yes. God's, Bob's, Flying Spaghetti Monsters, whatever. But I took down, I'd say probably another somewhere 750 to 1,000 square feet of weeds that are, you know, up to my belly button, and I ain't short. So that was so what I would do is I'd go out and weed eat for a while, and then I'd come in and work on computer for a while, go out and weed eat for a while, work on computer for a while. You know how it goes. And it was most productive, at least I thought so. You bastards. Okay, sorry. We're having some internet problems here, so I may move to sort those out here in just a second. Oh, let's do it now. Stand by, please. There's a DNS server issue with front. It's like, God damn, really? Yeah, really. Hey, I had a 50% chance of pulling the right plug and not disconnecting the stream, and ha ha, I got it right. Yay me. Yeah. Right.
I rule.
I do. So that means I will be in the chat room in a minute, because that's of course always the next part of the process. I heartily invite you to check out the chat room yourself. We have a rollicking good time in there every evening when the program is live, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. I'm headed there right this very little instant. And we'll see who's waiting for me and who's waiting for you and who's waiting for us. We know we will be, of course, capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who is in fact a spacing guild master, but it remains to be seen whether or not Sparky has folded space, you know, just on a whim, because it all depends on what kind of a day it is out there in Northern California. Nonetheless, when I get there, I'll be happy. So another piece of information. Thank you very kindly to a brand new subscriber. You get a cowbell. Thank you to Mary Bill for jumping in and subscribing. And thank you to Mark in Oregon, who jumped in the wee hours of the morning this morning. And thanks to them, I can say that takes the fundraising goal for this evening down to $140. Other subscribers take it down even farther. James does. As does Angelica in Oregon. Thank you, James. Thank you, Angelica. Thank you as well to Mark in Minnesota. Thank you, Mark. And Paul in California. So the way it works out is with all of our subscribers and Gary in New York, that means we actually took the fundraising goal down to $110 this evening, which is really, really helpful. It is really helpful indeed, because with tomorrow being missing, that means we can just raise $200 tonight, have half of tomorrow done, and do the other half on prayer meeting Wednesday, which seems doable, hopefully. So we'll try to raise $200 this evening. Whereas it would have been, you know, 300. So can we do that? 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 and a quarter, 64 at $3.13, and we will round up that half penny for a new thing of turtle wax for the Maybach. Well, the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. And if you wish to become a subscriber, just click the little box and zounds, you'll be right there and just fill out the fields and just put in $10. You don't have to go with the little dots that say, like, you know, the 50,000 bajillion. No, just put a number in the box and it'll be fine. So that's how that works. If you don't like PayPal, and I understand that some people don't, the mailbox works fine too. Boss Man Wayne is back in the hospital, so that means at some point I'll have to run over to Beckley and check the mail. Thank you very kindly to those of you who do participate through the mailbox, folks like Terrace and Brandon. Thank you very kindly indeed. I'll have to run over and check the mail. Boss Man Wayne's back in the hospital with a little bit of a complication following his surgery over in Virginia. We hope that gets resolved fairly quickly. And that being the case, anyway, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Okay? And if you shoot me a note and give me a heads up, I'll keep an eye out for it. So anyway, I'm going to be a little bit harum scare. I'm a little bit busy this week. But it should be a pretty good broadcast week. Pretty enjoyable, fun. Yes, PMB stands for Personal Mail Box at the UPS store there, where we get our mail, and where the Klan also gets theirs. So I'm gonna have to put my hickory axe handle in the vehicle to. For those trips, just, you know, you never know when you're going to run across the Grand Dragon or an Exalted Kleagle or a Noble Cyclops or a Precious Lumpkin or whatever. And, you know, that kind of brings me to a thing. This being, well, you know what today is. I mean, apart from being the 12th day of June 2017, yeah.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. With the dulcet tones of the Calliope, we know that it is Moran Monday on the Horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. Here, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, right behind me, well, by Jove, we've got them all. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, trumpanzees, libertarians, 1%ers, 2%ers, 3%ers, for potato more, Republicans, they're all here in the Moran Monday tent, just a few simple steps off the Carnival Midway. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. That's right, the way it works out, if you're a $10 a month contributor, it works out to about less than 17 cents an hour for programming here, and you can't buy anything at the Rippy Mart for 17 cents. It is, in fact, one of the biggest bargains in media today. Oh, yes, oh, yes. So just walk away from that game where you're throwing the ping pong balls at the goldfish bowls trying to win a little itsy bitsy iguana that will soon, given enough time and a big enough terrarium, will get big enough to, carry small children on its back when it runs down the long straight hallway using its tail for balance. Oh, yes, oh, yes. You don't need an iguana like that, friends and neighbors, aunts and uncles, kitties and cousins, brothers and sisters, moms and dads. No, you don't. You don't. You need to come over here, wander into the Moran Monday tent, get behind the thin cybernetic veil of canvas, and in fact, while you're there, just a simple warning, keep a close watch and probably a hand or two on children, pets, purses, wallets, European-style messenger bags, and perhaps even that iguana that you won throwing ping pong balls at a goldfish bowl, because, of course, the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. And you will. You will. Moran Monday's almost too easy sometimes. Because you give wing nuts a weekend to work with, and they're gonna provide you content, without a doubt, absolutely. So, it is this week. Oh yeah, because over the weekend, there was there were marches all over the country, and those marches were in support of LGBTQQQ rights. People marched who were LGBTQQQ, and their allies, straight folks, marched too, I presume, in support of them. But down in my hometown, courtesy of one of my dearest, oldest friends, a fellow with whom I shared the nursery. In the hospital, time immediately following our birth back in the early 1960s. I found out via him that there in Northwest Alabama. And this is the good part. There in Northwest Alabama, they rallied for LGBTQQQ rights. Granted, that little corner of Alabama has always been a bit of a brigadoon. Not easily accessed. There's no interstate within, 50 miles of it. And so you've got to want to get there to get to the shoals. And when you get there, well, there's some good and there's some bad. A lot of good. Best hot dog on earth. Best grilled peanut butter and banana sandwich on earth, served incidentally in the town's very oldest business. A little cafe on Court Street, on the north end of Court Street. Orange pineapple ice cream is pretty damn special, too. And then there's the music. If you're a Jason Isbell fan, if you're a Drive-By Truckers fan, if you're a blues fan, you have, in many ways, the Shoals to thank for it. Literature. The humanities. Simple humanity. Across the river, just across the river, in Tuscumbia, Alabama, the little town with scum in the middle. No, that's bad of me. Helen Keller became enlightened, and enlightened a waiting world. There's a lot right about that community. And as I've mentioned before, it could be that it's special because the rise in industry that brought a lot in the late 50s and early 60s to the area brought in a lot of cultural diversity. The little place where I grew up is a testament to the value of diversity. And so I had the same feeling that many young people do about my hometown when I was growing up. When I was 18 years old, I said that the best way to view my hometown was in a rearview mirror. Wisdom comes with age, though, and you recognize how special a place is. And so it was that yesterday, or not yesterday, but over the weekend, there in the heart o' Dixie, in the northwest corner of Talabama, people got together. Not a big town, it's not a big area. A goodly number of souls, as they say, showed up to rally in support of LGBTQQQ rights. Good. This is a good sign. Because when that happens in places like Alabama, it means there's hope for the future. Unfortunately, some other people, and I use the term people in this instance loosely, showed up. Who showed up? The Klan showed up. They're in their robes and their hats with their flags, and they rallied there in Wilson Park. I guess because homosexuality is a threat to their racial purity. Were they rallying against gay black folks? God. You know, they're not going to knock you over with their brains. The Klan aren't. But here's the thing. And the Klan are morons. They are a domestic terror organization. And we have the Klan only because we have an overly broad understanding of the idea of freedom of association. But they showed up. I wonder if it's ever occurred to them that those white sheets they wear are very reminiscent of the attire of an entire. Oh, we're working the language today, boys and girls. The attire of an entire culture which they despise. You know, Arabs, right? Yeah. No, because that would require a brain, and Klan ain't got no brains. Hi, brain. Why did I do that? At any rate, they were there with their flags and I presume their bullhorn and talking about white genocide and racial purity and leave Trump alone and we're going to make America great again and you know all of that crap. And there were about 7 of them. Did I mention? Yes, I did mention that we're talking here about Talabama, Heart of Dixie. Segregation today, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever, as George Wallace said some 57 years ago. Yeah, sorry, George. Didn't quite work out that way, did it? Well, there's a lot of work remains to be done. In many ways, America's public schools are more segregated in some places than they were when there were laws to segregate them. Turns out economics and political philosophies can go further than any punitive statute ever could. But there were 100 or so people rallying in support of LGBTQQQ rights. And there were 7 lonely Klansmen. This is a start. This is a good sign. And in point of fact, I just got a note from One Pebble North. Instead of reacting, they were mocked, viled by the people in support of a humane America, an open America, an open gender orientation, ethnicity. Yeah, the Klan was mocked. The photo that I saw showed them very clearly standing there in Wilson Park. And just the Klans always get with the flags. They're into the flags. But big covering Southern Baptist. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I don't think I did that part 28 minutes ago. Because I am a recovering Southern Baptist, because I was dipped by the heel in intolerance and bigotry at a very young age, not by my parents and not even really in school, but in a very, 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 very white church where every prayer meeting Wednesday evening I would gather with the youth group. Well, we had a flag. We had the flag of the United States of America, to which we pledged allegiance. And quick as we were done pledging allegiance to the United States flag, we pledged allegiance to the Christian flag. Because I guess Christianity needs a flag. Now, most of us know that most of us know, I think, that the Pledge of Allegiance to the American flag was written by a Baptist minister from Massachusetts who was a socialist back in the 1890s. Of course, it didn't have some of the stuff in it, the under God part, for instance, that it has now. But yeah, it was written by a Baptist minister. if you've never had to deal with it, well, I had forgotten it, but I just looked it up real quick. The Pledge of Allegiance to the Christian flag goes as follows. I pledge allegiance to the Christian flag and to the Savior for whose kingdom it stands, one Savior crucified, risen, and coming again with life and liberty to all who believe. You know, it doesn't quite have the je ne sais quoi of the Pledge of Allegiance to the American flag, but, it, well, whatever. Oh, there's a pledge to the Bible. We never got around to that. There's all kinds of icky Christo-fascist stuff out there. But anyway, the Christian flag was the Klan had the Christian flag. And you know what wasn't there? And the Christian flag, in case you're wondering, is a white field with a blue square in the upper left corner. And a red cross. And the Klan had it there in Wilson Park in Florence, Alabama. You know what didn't happen that day? No Christian walked up to the Klan and said, "You vile filth, you have no right to be carrying that flag. You are not Christians. You are not followers of Jesus Christ. You know nothing of his saving grace. You know nothing of his teachings. And you are not going to be a part of the elect when you die. And you are not going to eat pie in the sky when you die. Because you are not, oh, noble lumpkin." A Christian. No one tried to take their Christian flag away from them because, well, they're the Klan. And of course, from the moment it was founded, the Klan has identified with been identified by Christianity as a Christian organization. Just wanted to point that out. You know, if a Muslim looks cross-eyed at a Christian, the entire Republican Party is waiting for marching orders from Fox News to demand that every Muslim on earth condemn the actions of these. And yet nobody ever calls on the Christians to condemn organizations like the Klan. Oh, well, because, you know, Christians can't do anything about it. I mean, it's just how Christianity is. I mean, chicken shit. Right. So that's something that didn't happen. But still, from a Moran Monday standpoint, yes, the Klan showed up. Yes, the Klan are stupid, mean, violent, evil, a domestic terrorism organization. But they were outnumbered in Alabama on a beautiful, beautiful summer's weekend. They couldn't get even 10. They couldn't get even 10, not a dozen Klansmen out. That is a good thing. So we've got that going for us. And by the way, here at the halfway point of the first hour, I have a note coming from Bob in Texas. Bob says, I'm putting $100 on the table as a challenge, a matching challenge. If others match it, they get doubled. Your 5 becomes 10, thanks to Bob in Texas. Your 10 becomes 20. So don't let a good challenge like this, don't let a challenge like this go by, a matching offer like this go by. And we can actually be, you know, okay for the first day of the week. All right. So, moving along now. Thank you, Bob, very kindly for making that challenge. That is most helpful. Note coming from Matt in San Francisco. We are not civilized. I don't think we're going to have to fight over that. My sister, who is in her early 60s, gets by on disability. Her husband also receives disability benefits. They live in one of the poorest states in the Union, New Mexico. I won't make a West Virginia or Mississippi comparison here. No, it is. New Mexico is. Isn't it interesting that states that are resource rich and also rich in profound natural beauty also find themselves among the poorest states in the Union? It's the resource curse. My daughter, for instance, lives in a town that is undermined by uranium mining. Lord only knows the impact that it's having on her. Anyway, Matt in San Francisco, we are not civilized. My sister, who is in her early 60s, gets by on disability. Her husband also receives disability benefits. They live in one of the poorest states, New Mexico. She's been regularly seeing doctors basically every 2 weeks for the past 2 years. She's been plagued with diverticulitis, a prolapsed colon, and other digestive issues, all these ailments being addressed through the Medicaid system. 2 months ago, she had a 2-week stay at University of New Mexico Hospital. They struggled to determine what the issue was, diagnosed her with pancreatitis, put a stent in her bile duct, and sent her home. This month, she went back in, complaining of tremendous pain. This time, the diagnosis was pancreatic cancer. Further testing shows possible spread to liver and lungs. If the spots on the other organs turn out not to be cancer, then there is a curative surgery called the Whipple. If cancerous, the care is only palliative. I'm struggling with how someone could be seeing doctors continuously over a 2-year period only to end up with a cancer diagnosis. My only conclusion is, when you're poor, doctors only treat what is right in front of them. They don't dig deeper and order more tests to see if anything else is going on, because that costs money. And just who's going to pay for that? In a Republican-run state, when you're poor, this country just doesn't think you matter. We have a great deal of hubris claiming we have the best medical care in the world. That may be true, but unless you have the wealth to afford great insurance, that care is beyond reach. We are not a civilized society. Signed, Matt in San Francisco. And how true that is. Matt, from a personal standpoint, my heart goes out to your sister. I know what that pain is that you're describing. And it is horrifying. And it is ruinous. And I hope they are... one of the keys to healing is not hurting. And I hope that they're... Although I know they are in New Mexico, just like anywhere else in the United States, they're all obsessed with, well, you know, I don't know if we can give you any opioids, because, you know, you might wind up a junkie there. Pendulums. But the fact of the matter is, it is not the same here as it is other places. If you are in the UK, for instance, and you utilize the National Health Service because you're sick. Well, okay, back up. I guess if you're the coin, or one of Chuck and Di's little gits, you probably get better health care. You do. But by and large, the quality of health care under the National Health Service in the UK, and for that matter, the quality of health care under the Canadian system, is very, very, very high quality. And it doesn't depend upon folks looking down their noses at you for what they perceive to be the quality of your care. Now, if you look, or if you say to the healthcare system, yeah, well, you know, I know that you guys look down your nose at Medicaid, and I know that you don't get, I know that Medicaid patients don't get what they necessarily should. Well, no, we treat everybody the same. That may be true in more enlightened states. I have a feeling that maybe it's different, say, you know, Matt's in San Francisco. I have a feeling maybe it's different for Medicaid patients in San Francisco, I mean, or in California. We've had Tracy, for instance, tell us about how well she was cared for when she had to have her Chiari malformation remedied. But in states where a Medicaid card is a sign of economic disadvantage, of non-wealth status, it's also a license to undertreat. And that was that, and that very thing is one of the reasons that primarily Confederate states so thoroughly despised the Medicaid expansion inside the Affordable Care Act, because it was going to serve as a leveler. No longer would Medicaid simply be an insurance program for the poorest of the poor, because working people could qualify for it too. 137% of the poverty line. And depending on how many kids you've got, you know, that number can go up. You know, like $37,000 for a family of five. $37,000 is not a lot in 2017 America, but if your mom and dad, or mom and mom, or dad and dad raising three kids, then you know that'll get you health care. And you know what? Mom and mom, or dad and dad, or mom and dad can be getting up and going to work every day of their lives and putting in meaningful labor in service of our great capitalistic economic experiment. And nobody can look down their nose at them for having Medicaid. And that is why it is so despised, because all of a sudden, Medicaid isn't the great big red flag that this is just... These are just disposable Americans that you can ignore. And yeah, 2 years, having dealt with pancreas and having asked pancreas questions, this is probably no comfort to you, Matt, but I've looked at doctors and I've asked the question. I said, hey, how about a PET scan, buddy? Yeah, it wouldn't show us anything unless it's already there. What? Huh? And so doctor after doctor after doctor, I look at them, they say, okay, well, what's the imaging study that we use to make sure that I don't have cancer? And they say, oh, it's a CT scan. And okay. And so it was a CT scan that discovered the zits on my pancreas last October or something. That's a disgusting image, isn't it? Yeah. And it was a CT scan that saw the fluid around my spleen. But I have tremendous sympathy for what your sister's going through, Matt. And frankly, we need to do better. But until the healthcare plan, the healthcare system is nationalized, until we can put in place a system that says that the accident of your birth or where you happen to move to work or to live does not serve as a death warrant, we're going to continue to deal with problems like this. And that dovetails, as it were, nicely, not nicely, that's the wrong word, with something that I saw coming in from Mike in Cascadia just before the program. And I wanted to alert you to it anyway. There is the indivisible folks, the folks who have put together the strategy for resisting Trump and his legislative agenda and all of that. Well, they've got a guide out now to resisting the American Health Care Act. Trump Ryan Care. That great, sticky, gooey, wet dream of the right wing to take away health care, not just from poor people, but from working people and all kinds of Americans whom they deem to be not useful to Republicans. Well, the indivisible folks have a guide to resisting and acting against what is coming down the pike. There is reason to believe, and of course, let's remember, I predicted this. Not that I'm sitting here, if we ever go to video, I am going to, I'm going to have to get a tattered purple robe with a frayed moon and stars applique on it and glow-in-the-dark paint that says, "Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby?" And I'm going to have to sit and hold with the magic eight ball and all of that stuff if we ever go to video. Big if. But I mentioned, when Tryon Care passed the House and they drank beer and toasted each other for fucking millions of people out of their health care, the Republicans did, and all of the for-profit media said, "Well, Fred, everybody that I talk to in the Senate, like mavericky John McCain and his trusty sidekick Lindsey Graham, tells me that Trump Care is dead on arrival in the Senate, Fred. Now back to Jim in the Weather Center." Well, no. No. And so it turns out that the Republicans in the Senate, not allowing any Democrats anywhere near the process, have in fact been working on a way to pass Try and Care, and because Republicans in the Senate get all damp too about the thought of being able to fuck tens of millions of Americans out of their health care and kill a big chunk of them. They get off on it, okay? They do. They're goddamn vampires without the fangs, okay? And so the indivisible folks, and you might want to go and look it up, indivisible.com, Trump Care Game Plan Toolkit. You might find it useful. In it, among the resources that are there, as Mike in Cascadia shared with me earlier, if Tryon Care passes and is signed into law by the Clementine Caligula. More on that in a moment. Well, here in West Virginia, where I live, the average premium increase in 2018 will be $1,006. In a state that's got a lot, in a state whose millionaires can be measured, no hillbilly jokes, please, on both hands and both feet, with a couple of toes left over and no guys reaching for their zipper. Okay, the average premium increase will be $1,006. Well, we know how it goes when I cipher. Let's do this. Clear 1006 divided by 12 equals, yeah, about $83 a month. And for folks that make choices between, say, getting their pharmaceuticals and getting tires, or paying property taxes and having groceries, or buying clothes for the kids, or that's a hell of a lot of money. Total number of people in West Virginia who will lose health care under TryNCare, which I guess if it passes the Senate, we'll have to call it McTryin' Care. Tryin' Turtle Care. Total health insurance coverage losses will be $122,800. Out of that will be 77,300 people on Medicaid losing coverage. Employer-sponsored coverage losses will be at $15,900, and individual market coverage losses will be at $29,600. Mike in Cascadia kindly pointed out that in his home state of Washington, 344,000 people will lose insurance, and said, talk about death panels. Oh, they're real. Sarah Palin wasn't kidding. It's just that it wasn't the Kenyan Muslim you slurper who was trying to kill people. It was her own goddamned party. Wow. Yeah. So there's that. Oh, by the way, one other thing. Turns out, if you try to... I guess that criminal justice reform is coming along quite swimmingly. Turns out, if you try to strangle the life out of a reporter, you get community service. Oh, really? Now, if the said reporter had tried to strangle the life out of Greg Gianforte, the indictment would have probably been federal in nature, felonious in nature, and he would still be in jail and unable to make bail. But if you're a New Jersey gajillionaire who moves to Montana for the big skies and the wide open spaces and the wing nuts and the right wing politics, yeah, community service. He had his hands around his neck. Community service. Speaking of New Mexico, note coming in from Ron in the land of the two-putt. My young guy, the industrial design artist, is leaving San Diego and moving to Albuquerque. He's currently home on vacation before actually doing the move. Said that he noticed the difference between California and Toronto immediately upon getting off the airplane. Fancy that. I suspect he will notice a big difference between California and New Mexico. With a good salary and a good health care dental plan, I suspect he will be in the minority out there. I suspect. Ron is apparently challenging me for the title of Little Ray of Sunshine this evening. Looking ahead to the next election, I'm not certain the Democrats can coalesce into a party with a common view going into the elections. The traditional Democratic power brokers in every state will have to find some sort of common ground with the Bernie crowd. Both sides are going to have to make some concessions if the bigger prize of gaining control of at least one of the two federal legislative bodies is to be realized. Same holds true for those purple states. No concessions, no prize, but a continuing diatribe of damn that Jill Stein. I sincerely hope this doesn't result in the Democrats circling the wagons and firing inward. Well, Ron, you can hope in one hand and you know the rest. Democrats, get organized. Not fire fucking howitzers into their own feet. You're kidding, right? Our buddy Ron must be already having a penitent chat with the Reverend Craig. Yeah, note coming from Scott and Punky. Healthcare reality check. So it turns out the GOP House and GOP Senate are in fact the death panel they warned us about. Of course they are. They always tell you the truth about themselves by what they project onto others. If you see or hear a Republican predicting some sort of doom and gloom as a result of the commie inclinations of the Democrats, well, all you got to do is sort of turn it on its side, rotate it through a different universe, and you've got exactly what they intend to do. Absolutely. Like I said, many more ends. And I got this one. Or nominations. So for years, theater in New York has put up what is called Beer in the Park. I once studied theater with a guy who worked with Joseph Papp in the earliest days of Shakespeare in the Park. To brush with greatness and drop. But he regaled with stories of the early days of Shakespeare in the Park. And I always thought it would be a fine little... could you possibly have a better evening than watch Shakespeare smack dab in the middle of Central Park? I can scarcely imagine it. So this year, one of the plays they were putting up, I guess they couldn't resist, is Julius Caesar. Now, I have no doubt, given the breadth of wisdom and intelligence and learning of the Horn Family Community Congregation, that no small number of us are familiar with Shakespeare's retelling of the Julius Caesar story. Now, he got what he had through sources that to this day we're still arguing about. But he tells the story of the assassination of Julius Caesar and what comes after. And the folks who put up Shakespeare in the Park, the public theater in New York City, I guess couldn't resist the urge to do a play about a dictator. Because Caesar doesn't come off particularly well in Shakespeare's play. If you want an alternative vision of who Caesar was, Michael Parenti's The Assassination of Julius Caesar is a quick and fascinating read. Let's remember that Julius Caesar was a member of the... they basically had a two-party system.
Corrupt two-party system!
Between what were called the optimates, O-P-T-I-M-A-T-E-S, the optimates, as represented by, Cicero and Pompey and that insufferable boor, Cato the Younger, the Metellus family, that bunch. And they called themselves the optimates because they considered themselves, optimate is best in Latin. And they considered themselves the better of Roman culture. They considered themselves the better because they had more money. Now, who does that sound like to you? On the other side, and they'd been there for 100 years and more, a group called the Populares, the People's Party, who tried to enact reforms to provide some level of basic decency and dignity to the working and poor class that actually kept Rome going. A considerable amount of time before Julius Caesar comes on the scene, there were a couple of brothers. And in an irresistible comparison to the Kennedys, Gaius Gracchus and his brother, the Gracchi, were deeply into the idea of public service and the public good. The bonum publicum. And they got into public office, started trying to enact land reforms, food reforms, wealth reforms, and the optimates immediately had them murdered. Because that's kind of how politics worked back then. You don't like them? Kill them. So it wasn't like assassinating Julius Caesar was anything new. There was a long history of assassination by that point in the dying Roman Republic. But Caesar was assassinated, but he was assassinated not necessarily because... Well, the talking points, the front story of why Caesar was assassinated was that he had subverted the unwritten constitution of the Roman Republic. That he was going to set himself up to be dictator. This was a story that was fabricated and spread about by the optimates. What was their proof? What was their evidence of that charge? Well, the fact that he didn't want to just completely, totally, absolutely shit on the poor. If you felt like maybe the poor people deserved to eat every day, no matter what they were doing for their betters, well, by God, you want to be a dictator. Caesar was probably Caesar was killed as much for being a member of the Populares as he was for any governmental ambitions he may have had. And of course, he repeated, "Oh, Caesar wants to be a king." Didn't we just now go through 8 years of right wingers in this country, optimates, you know, because they think they're our betters, saying that Kenyan Muslim you slurpers done set himself up as a tyrant. Tyrant and dictator are actually used to describe Barack Obama over the last 8 years. Remember? History doesn't repeat, but it damn sure rhymes. Well, so the public theater decides to put up Julius Caesar in Shakespeare in the Park and had it in previews, you know, working out the bugs, working out the kinks, making sure that it flowed smoothly. And in you know, when you put one of these things up, you make choices. There's nothing that says you have to do Caesar in togas. Nothing. A few years back, there was a production of, what was it, Richard III? I can't remember, but Ian McKellen was in it, Annette Bening was in it, and it was set in a fascist England with lots of 30s period, you know, high water mark of world global fascism. Costuming. Well, along comes this production, and they decide to do it maybe a little heavy-handedly. The guy playing Caesar gets decked out in a blue business suit with a too long red tie and a blondish orange wig. And, of course, they didn't take out the part where Caesar gets pincushioned. Because that's how Caesar was murdered. He was stabbed to death. Repeatedly. With Marcus Junius Brutus delivering the coup de grace. And all of a sudden, in previews, Fox News and the mouth walking, knuckle breathing freaks of the right wing had an absolute shit hemorrhage over the production of Shakespeare's Julius Caesar for this summer's Shakespeare in the Park. And as a result of that, two corporate sponsors of Shakespeare in the Park, Bank of America and Delta Airlines, pulled their sponsorship. Well, it's not in Julius Caesar, but Shakespeare has a line for the likes of those. A hero dies but once. A coward dies a thousand deaths. Because the arts in this country can't survive without corporate money. Not something on the scale of Shakespeare in the Park, no. Because, you know, in the Tonys were just last night. How cool is it that a play about Evan Hansen won best play? A musical about Evan Hansen. Wow. You know, climate change, all of that. But big theatrical enterprises have to have big dollars because the people who work in that industry and work hard make good money. That's union work, baby. From the actors with Actors Equity to the electricians and the guys who hang the lights and the stage manager and the people who do the sound, that's all union work. And it ain't cheap. Because it's hard. And sometimes dangerous. But because a bunch of Trumpanzees threw a fit over the staging of the assassination of Julius Caesar, not Donald Trump, goddammit, Julius Caesar, Delta and Bank of America have bailed out on their sponsorship. Yeah, pardon me if I take a moment to say, fuck them. What did it? Obviously, their sponsorship wouldn't have been touched if it. Well, okay, so maybe the. How about the guy has a blonde toupee, but he's wearing a toga? How about a blonde toupee and a toga, but he's wearing a tie too long? Goddamn fools! It wasn't a message saying, let's go kill Donald Trump, which I didn't just say, Agent Fred. The whole play is about what a mistake it was to have assassinated Caesar. Because the people who assassinate Caesar come out worse than Caesar himself. One of the ancient sources says that the night before he was murdered, he hosted a dinner party at the Domus Publica, which was attached to the Temple of the Vestal Virgins, which he lived in because he was also Pontifex Maximus. And during the symposium portion of the dinner, which is the civilized, intelligent conversation around which all classical meals centered, the dinner table conversation was reported to be, what is the best way to die? And Caesar is said to have answered, I care not the manner as long as it be quick. Well, there's an open argument as to whether how he died was quick. Looks pretty miserable to me, with a bunch of hesitant would-be assassins trying to screw their courage to the sticking place and get in and do the work, and only one of the knife jobs actually killed him. He would have survived save for one knife blow, which Shakespeare indirectly ascribes to Brutus with the Et tu Brute line. But because it gets staged, I guess what Fox and the Trumpanzees didn't like is the portrayal of Caesar in the likeness of a man who is presently the President of the United States, disgusting as the concept may be to even mention, and it is, in the guise of a would-be dictator. Because there's not a lot of wiggle room in the way that Caesar is written. Now, how you portray him, that's a different thing. But the way he's written, it's pretty clear. He's haughty. He is arrogant. But this, to compare Julius Caesar to Donald Trump, is quite possibly the greatest insult to which Julius Caesar's ashes have ever been subjected. No doubt about it. Mussolini saw himself as a modern-day Julius Caesar. He was just a fascist punk. Caesar was brilliantly educated, developed a tactical and scientific engineering mind, the likes of which was not matched in his age or very, very often by anyone to this day. He was fluent in both Latin and Greek, spoke Greek most of the time, was a prolific literate writer who needed no ghostwriters to produce his Gallic Wars or his text on the Civil War, and was said to have even tried his hand at poetry as a younger man. He was classically educated. He knew pretty much a little bit about everything there was to know in the ancient world. He had his, he knew drama, he knew poetry, he knew the science of military engineering, he knew strategy, he knew tactics, he knew history. He knew his Plato and his Aristotle. Donald Trump knows nothing of this. But we live in an America. Do you recall earlier in the program when I said that we tolerate the Klan out of a misguided appreciation of the First Amendment and freedom of expression and freedom of association? Do you recall the number of times that I've said that the First Amendment has been reduced to little more than a life support system for the religion industry? Well, this is a case in point. Preachers and pastors in pulpits all over the country spent 8 years inveighing from that pulpit against the Kenyan Muslim usurper in our White House. They now spend their Sundays extolling the virtues of a man whose manifest immorality would make the devil himself blush, and has as much to do with Christianity as a hog does with Sunday dinner. Well, no. Ham. Has as much to do with Christianity as I don't know, because there's nothing Christian about Donald Trump. But if the special snowflakes in the 30% or so of America that still support the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini piss and moan and throw a hissy and hold their breath until they turn human, well, that ain't happening, then, by God, Delta Airlines and Bank of America will pull their funding from a production of a play by William Shakespeare that does not contain the word Trump in it, not once at all. Heavy-handed, yeah. Apparently Calpurnia, the character, Caesar's wife, apparently Calpurnia speaks with an Eastern European accent. But so what? Oh, and what is Udi? Or is he Cootie? I can't keep the two Trump boys separate. They all look the same to me. Udi or Cootie tweeted,
I wonder how many taxpayer dollars are supporting this.
Ah, there we do. Okay, yeah. Thank you, Betsy. Yeah, he has as much to do with Christianity as a hog has to do with a Shabbat dinner. Yeah. But I'm sorry, I read that and it pissed me off. Because in America, we the only reason that art exists is to, yes, please, but also to challenge the mind and to somehow transform the human experience. I'd love to see that production of Julius Caesar. Maybe I'd like it better in togas. But, God, I'll travel to Morgantown, West Virginia to see a student production of Euripides. To see Julius Caesar put up professionally? Hell yeah! Oh, but the special snowflakes can't... Well, remember... the special snowflakes didn't like it when Mike Pence went to see Hamilton either, now did they? Remember the Twitter hashtag, Boycott Hamilton, after which Hamilton raked in more money than before? Well, hopefully, after this piece of craven cowardice on the parts of Delta Airlines and Bank of America... maybe the same will happen to this production of Julius Caesar. Delta Airlines tweeted a statement.
No matter what your political stance may be, the graphic staging of Julius Caesar at this summer's Free Shakespeare in the Park does not reflect Delta Airlines' values. Their artistic and creative direction crossed the line on the standards of good taste. We have notified them of our decision to end our sponsorship as the official airline of the public theater, effective immediately.
Pissants. Cowardly pissants. What expertise? What level of education or intelligence does anyone in Delta Airlines bring to bear in a decision about how to stage a play by William Shakespeare? Nothing. Shit. They can't even make their fucking planes comfortable to ride in for 30 minutes at a time, let alone across the country. Fuckers. Sorry. I get a little pushy about the arts. Robert in Australia, an American airline talking about good taste? LOL. Yeah. I wonder what it is about Julius Caesar that doesn't reflect Delta Airlines' values, because this would not have happened had it not been for the costuming and the stage design and the set design. So why didn't they say, we disagree with the set design? Well, because that makes them come across as a prissy bunch of little piss ants. I mean, look, like we talked about Friday evening, the goddamn Trump family is opening a new line of hotels because they know that their Trumpansies can never afford so much as to set foot inside one of their tacky-ass, bed-bug-ridden so-called luxury affairs. American idea. You'll get some dry toast in the morning and, you know, shut up and get out. Bank of America said,
the public theater chose to present Julius Caesar in a way that was intended to provoke and offend. Had this intention been made known to us, we would have decided not to sponsor it. We are withdrawing our funding for this production.
American Express, oh, heroes.
They said, well, our funding of the public theater does not extend to providing funding for the production of this staging of Julius Caesar. So we're clear on this, right? Nor do we condone the interpretation of the Julius Caesar play.
Bunch of goddamn miserable shit weasel bean counters. It opens today, by the way. And no, the guy playing Caesar doesn't look like Donald Trump. And by the way, he is described by some ancient sources as having been fair-haired. So if he's got a blonde wig, tough shit. Because the makeup of the makeup of the population of the Italian peninsula then is not necessarily the same as what it was now, and even what it is now is not the same as what most people think it means to be Italian. Jesus, they referred to Pompey as a goddamn Gaul because of his complexion. But this is one of those little signposts on the road to fascism. Thou shalt not criticize the dear leader. How much would you have to work to take this CNN story and just replace set it in North Korea, and you go, oh, well, yeah, I mean, that's how those people are. In case you want to tweet at them and tell them what a bunch of cowardly shit weasels they are, the Twitter handle for Bank of America is @BofA_news. @BofA_news. If you'd care to reach out to Delta, it's just @Delta. Marty says, I find it amusing that the snowflakes are complaining about Julius Caesar when Trump is more like either Nero or Caligula. Do not speak ill of the furrier. Ron in Raleigh says, oddly enough, when they did Julius Caesar with Barack Obama as Caesar, not a goddamn mumbling word was spoken. Well, of course not, because he was a Kenyan Muslim usurper, and he really was a dictator tyrant. And the special snowflakes were not offended by that. In fact, they found that to be downright inspiring. Remember that the United States Secret Service had more threats against the life of Barack Obama in his 8 years in office than in the combined threats against all the previous presidents in the history of the, you know, Secret Service. Right. Jack in Shreveport says, subject line, Shakespeare, in all the hoopla generated, there is, of course, no mention of the free speech rights pertaining to the production of the play. I guess free speech only goes so far with Delta. Well, I mean, it's not the government. I mean, look, it certainly has no, there is no nexus with the First Amendment because, well, Delta ain't the government. But free speech is a concept and not just a legal tenet. And so, no, but yes, on a Delta flight and see how quick your ass gets dragged off the plane. See how far your free speech rights go. All right. So we're halfway through the program. And let me thank Liz. Thank you, Liz, very kindly for jumping in on Bob's challenge. We have 90, we can be done with funding for the evening today with me being out tomorrow. One friend at 90 or two at, right, four at 2250, eight at 11 and a quarter. Right. Thank you. Thank you, Liz. And thank you again to Bob. Let's run over and check in with, Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Sorry to make you wait, but I had to get that off my chest.
No, it was a good rant, good history rant, current and.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very kindly. It did. You know,
go ahead.
Well, I can't, you know, what Ron and Raleigh said is true. The precious little right wingers didn't have any problem with Obama being the, yeah, you get the idea.
It's double standard.
There we go.
That the problem with calling it that, it is the implication that their manner of behavior and being is tantamount to having a standard. Maybe it's true technically, but it's pretty low in terms of any standard I'm familiar with, you know?
Well, yeah.
But anyway, I've just got a couple of things. I don't know if you were going to take a music break or not, but I just wanted to do a couple of things. First and foremost would be the TV viewing tip for all of the fun lovers and truth seekers. Oh, and by the way, thank you for explaining to me what was going on with the front porch on Friday. I just couldn't figure it out. You know, I rebooted my my device and relaunched Skype and all that happy crappy. But apparently the problem wasn't on either my end or your end. So thank you for letting me know.
No, it was apparently on the Skype end.
Yeah. But anyway, just I was going to mention this the other day, but I'll do it now because there's still time on the East Coast and beyond. There's two things on PBS this week. More than likely, they will both be on everybody's local PBS, if not this week, at some point, because usually June, at least here, is a pledge month. So the programming goes to hell as far as relying on when something's on. But Tuesday night, there's a show called A Conversation with Bill Moyers. Actually Monday at 8 p.m., A Conversation with Bill Moyers. And he's usually pretty good. So look for that on your PBS lineup. And the other one is... And this one I know has aired in certain parts of the country, but tomorrow night, Tuesday, and possibly some other night in your local area, it's called JFK, the Lost Inaugural Gala. And what it was Frank Sinatra, Ethel Merman, Harry Belafonte, Ella Fitzgerald, Nat King Cole, Gene Kelly, and all manner of entertaining luminaries did a show, I guess the night before the inaugural of JFK, and there was a huge snowstorm in D.C. that damn near canceled the actual swearing-in, but they trucked in the Corps of Engineers and all that, and they got the streets passable, at least for the parade and on Capitol Hill the next day. But the night before the inauguration was the big celebration in the form of an entertainment gala. And the tape apparently was lost, or it was never broadcast on television. And that happened because of a weather-related thing. They taped it, but it never got broadcast. So this will be everybody's first chance to see it. And from the accounts at the time, it was supposedly quite the show. It certainly ranked way above whatever Trump's gala was. Didn't he have like that little girl singing the right-wing song and a couple of right-wing shit-kicker bands?
Jackie Ivanko singing the national anthem or God Bless Donald Trump or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm sure he had an entertainment gala prior to the inauguration day. Because that's pretty traditional. Of course, no, maybe he didn't. Maybe he couldn't get anybody to play, you know? Who knows? But that was mainly the TV viewing tip that I wanted to get out there, because both of those shows seem like they're going to be worthy of our time and our eyeballs and ear holes.
Yeah, well, that would be, and sort of like time travel, huh?
Yeah, because I'm old enough to remember JFK, but I'm not old enough really to have been paying attention to much of anything. But his the anniversary, the 100th anniversary of his birth was, I think it was May 29th. He would have been 100 years old. And on my Facebook, I posted a link to see and hear his inaugural address. And I pointed out to anybody who saw it that when you listen to it, I mean, really listen to the caliber of what the man had to say, despite the fact that he may have been a flawed politician and flawed human being, our national standards, there's that word again, standards, in the intervening years, something like 50, what would it be, 56 years, have dropped to such a point that sometimes you just, Crosby, Stills, Nash song, I just shake my head and cry. There's a line in Teach Your Children, whoever sang that.
Yeah, that was Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young.
Yeah, there's a line in there, you know, look at them and sigh, you know, shake your head and cry.
And know they love you.
Well, I will switch it around. I mean, I look at my country's choice in terms of chief executives and some of the other shenanigans, which is too friendly a term, but I'm feeling magnanimous today.
Right.
I look at my country, which I love dearly, and I sigh and I cry because our standards have gotten. Back when I used to sell cars, the owner of the dealership, the day he was teaching about trade-ins, he explained the importance of looking under the car and making sure the frame wasn't, as he put it, cattywampus. And our vision and our standards have gone like cattywampus to the extreme. And what do we have to do to get back to a state of ongoing tickety-boo, which is another old word that I love? You know, everything is in proper readiness is what that translates to. Could we get a little more tickety-boo and a lot less cattywampus? You know, is that too much to ask?
Getting America define tickety-boo and cattywampus may be too much to ask.
Well, it's got to be possible because we've been that before. I mean, if past is prologue, that's got to count for something. And the fact that at least the two of us can recognize where we are and can remember a time when it was not so bad. I'm a fan of Gene Shepard, and a lot of people used to talk about Gene Shepard as someone who dealt in nostalgia and talking about better times. And he kind of poo-pooed that.
I never heard Gene. I mean, I was very kindly provided with an entire wallet of CDs of Gene Shepard, which I have listened to at length. And I never saw, I never really heard Gene Shepard as a purveyor or an artist who worked in nostalgia.
Well, I didn't either, because a lot of people who probably never really heard him, or if they did hear him, they weren't really listening. He was, his message, and he even is quoted as saying this at some point, I think in an interview, he said, I don't necessarily subscribe to the notion that things were better way back when. Things were pretty much the same. It was just that if we were younger, and especially if we were children, we didn't yet know that we were all losers and that we were all going to die. You know, it was that illusion that we were working under at the time, or if not illusion, it was that lack of perspective and understanding that made those times seem more wonderful. And I don't know, I go back and forth on that. I don't know if I agree with that or not.
The older I get, the less I'm willing to buy into that stuff.
Because what stuff?
The idea of a golden age.
Yeah.
And the more I study history, the less I'm willing to buy into that stuff.
In other words, it wasn't as golden as we'd like to think it was.
Well, look,
was
the Republic. More... Look, the Republicans would love, for instance, to be shed of Social Security.
Yeah.
Well, there is no discussion. There is no debate. Okay. There's not even a controversy to teach. You know, Republicans and teach the controversy, whether it's evolution or climate change or anything. There's none of that about the fact that before Social Security, this country had a sickening, horrifying, trauma-laden problem with what became of its elderly.
Oh, yeah.
I'll never forget a conversation I had with Sandra years and years and years ago about a detailed Washington Post article about exactly what America was before Social Security and what it meant to grow old. And it was something to be dreaded and feared. And yet the Republicans want that America.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Medicare, too. Now, since we're on a related subject. Yeah, they envision a world when there ain't no Social Security, there ain't no Medicare, there ain't no Social Security disability, which automatically, you know, screws up people like me and like 10 or 12 million other folks. Okay, yeah, they love nothing more than that because they think it's a waste of money, or if not a waste, it's not something that the national government has any business being involved in. Okay, yeah, I get that they don't want that, but even, see, this is, it could be that the problem, part of the problem has to do with what constitutes a Republican today versus what constituted a Republican at one time, and maybe several times, when they actually did see the value. I mean, you look at the speech that Eisenhower gave,
but hold on.
Yeah.
No.
No.
The Social Security Act was passed through both houses of Congress without a single Republican vote, Scott. Not one.
I'm talking about once it was implemented and people, just everyday people, saw the benefit, there were, at some point later, Republicans who saw the value and knew enough not to touch that third rail. That's who I was talking
about.
Well,
yeah, and I suspect you were about to make reference to the letter, not a speech, but a letter that Eisenhower wrote to one of his cousins saying that any party that tried to touch Social Security would find itself in a generation to being reduced and no longer a national party.
Well, yeah, the letter also, but what the speech part of it was actually the 56 Republican platform. Is what I was going. I called it a speech, but I meant the platform. But even the speech, Eisenhower once gave an address where he put it right out there. He said, for every bomber we buy, that translates to X number of hospitals or X number of schools
right.
or X number of roads that won't get built. Okay.
And yet Eisenhower, I mean, see, because I refuse to get, I was raised by parents who were children in the Depression, who were born in the 20s.
Me too.
And I refuse to engage in any sort of revisionist nostalgia for a different kind of Republican, because I was taught from the ground up that Republicans mean no good to anybody who works for a living. So while we can point to Eisenhower and say, yeah, he said every bomb we blah, 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 he also fought against with all his might and all his will the idea that everybody should be able to go to the doctor when they're sick. He swore that would turn us commie overnight.
I get that. I'm just saying that it wasn't a... There have been instances when there are Republicans who have behaved responsibly at certain times and about certain things. Will you at least buy that?
Yes, if you in turn will concede that they did so not out of any respect for anybody or any regard for working people, but out of political fear, knowing that there was a sizable voting bloc who would come and remove them from office if they tried.
Yeah, okay. Well, we can proceed on both those understandings then. Yeah. And I'm not here to sing the praises of Democrats or Republicans because, well, just because. I mean, there's, you know, the decent Republicans that I recall from my youth, or let's put it this way, the statespersons that I recall from my youth, the responsible, straight-thinking, sober-minded grown-up statespeople and representatives and senators and presidents, that's all I'm saying is there was a time when we got it more right than wrong, but that whole fucking thing has been turned on its head in today's world. And that's why I'm thinking, you know, the fact that we did get it right a lot of the time once upon a time leads me to think that somehow, I don't know how, but somehow, some way, there will be a time when we'll be more like we were and less like we are. I guess that's what I'm saying. And maybe I'm living again in a fool's paradise. I'm just saying that I know it's happened before, so I question why it can't happen again. But that's just me. God, I certainly got off on a tangent with this. But I don't know.
I understand, but in the chat room, Laborman just posted repeatedly, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times, yeah. Repukes have always been Jagoffs, Scott. Repukes have always been Jagoffs, Scott.
All right. I get
and,
it.
And look, it's a dangerous business trying to state something categorically. Unless you happen to have the facts on your side, like the fact that Social Security passed through the Congress with no Republican votes at all.
All right. Well,
the Affordable Care Act passed through the Congress with no Republican votes at all. I suspect if you go back in history and look at and do the research, you'll probably find that in the immediate aftermath of the passage of the Social Security Act, there were those self-same Republicans saying, by God, if we get power, we're going to repeal that right away. And the American people had the common good sense not to let them have power. The difference being that we didn't have that good sense with regard to the Affordable Care Act. And we gave them power, and they're about to hurt a lot of people.
Well, yeah, if they're able to do it, they will, because that's how getting back to the standards for statespersonship and being a congressman or a senator or a president have gotten so fucked up to a fairly well. Listen, I'm going to go in a second, but I wanted to tell you of one thing. If you guys would send out some good energy. There's a very good likelihood that I'm going to be moving soon.
Oh, no.
To about 4.5 miles from here to a larger place at a lower cost, if you can believe that. And I don't know which way it's going to go because there might be some snags. But send out good energy because I went to see the place on Saturday. And I was very favorably impressed about it, and but like I say, there are some snags that could crop up and keep it from happening. So, you know, surround me with snag-free energy.
Absolutely, and hopes for a pool and a cabana and a river of beer flowing over your grandmother's paisley shawl.
Well, I can actually forego that. I mean, I have not had any of that good stuff on an ongoing basis for quite a long time. So, I mean, I'm not going to get greedy. You know,
I tell you what, it was kind of heartbreaking over the weekend. We had beautiful, beautiful blue sky weather.
Yeah.
It got up to what we in these parts refer to as hot. In other words, 90 degrees. And I went, basically, like I said, I'd go out and weed eat a while and come in and work on the computer a while and weed eat and computer. And it was the kind of hot, Scott, I don't do these rhymes on purpose. it was the kind of hot Scott that makes you feel like after you poured out, you know, a bunch of sweat doing honest work, there's something in your soul that says, you've earned a beer.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that my friends over at Secret Sandwich Society had just tapped the first keg of Crux by Bridge Brew Works there in Fayetteville, which is itself their take on my very favorite German beer style, which is called Kölsch.
Okay, I think I've heard you speak of it.
Oh, it's wonderful. And they just can't. I can't. I mustn't.
Yeah.
And that was hard on the soul. I mean, we're not talking about pink elephants or shaking hands or anything like that, or a sudden urge to take 12 steps to somewhere. But damn, as delightful as a big cold bottle of water is, it weren't no Kölsch.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel for you. I never acquired a taste for beer, but I think we've spoken before of my love for the occasional ice-cold vodka martini.
Well, that probably would have gone down right good in that heat, too. It just would have,
With an olive the size of a bulldog's eye. Let me just leave you with this one line that is not original, but I kind of hijacked it. It was on my Facebook the other night, and I know not everybody in the congregation is friends on Facebook with me, but I think this describes the situation we're in. The machinations of the Trump administration are murkier than Swamp Thing's underwear drawer.
L.
Ew. That's pretty.
Little cowbell, because you said it wasn't your own.
Yeah, that's pretty much where we are. So there's a lot of room for improvement, boys and girls. So let's get at it and just kick ass and take names and turn this ship around, okay?
Absolutely, and I hope you get to do the move, since it seems to be something that you want, and we'll think good thoughts and we'll talk.
Well, see, being a one bedroom, see, this means that and they'll wait until after I've busted my ass moving before they come visit. But with more room, every relative and even a few you never knew you had will show up, especially in the dead of winter back east or in the Midwest, to let's go see old cousin, uncle, brother, or pal, Scotty Boy, and his little bird Pumpkin, his little cat Chirps, and catch some of those rays instead of freezing our ass off, because now we know he has room, you know? So it's a double-edged sword.
I wouldn't advertise that on a worldwide broadcast if I were you, but it's too late now.
Oh, that's all right. Believe me, it would be nice
Oops,
to have...
Oops, the baby!
It would be nice to have company every now and again. Right now, I communicate solely by rumor and innuendo. So we'll see how this goes.
Very good. Very good. Well, Scott, you have yourself a good evening, and you know I appreciate your optimism.
Okay, well, you know me, old relentlessly optimistic Scotty boy.
Scotty of Sunnybrook Farm.
Indeed. I try to do my best. Always do right. It will gratify some and astonish the rest.
Here. You take care, Scott.
All right, Bob. Take care.
Bye now. Our buddy Scott calling from San Diego. It's about 5 minutes before the hour. And yes, with an hour and 5 minutes left in the program, we are still looking for $90, 9 people to meet Bob in Texas's challenge, which hopefully will happen so that we can, be okay going into Wednesday. Thanks, Liz, for jumping in on that early on. Hopefully Liz will get some friends along the way. What else have we got? Plenty. Maybe the Shakespeare in the Park thing didn't deserve the time that I gave it, but dadgummit, I despise when corporations turn into little chicken shits and bow to the pressures of the noisy, drop-dead, ignorant right wing. Oh, and by the way, one of my favorite Shakespeare lines of all comes from Julius Caesar. Cassius has a lean and hungry look. The context in which that line is delivered is meaningful, to say the least. You could say that, who would that line fit? Yeah, Jared Kushner has a lean and hungry look. And please believe me when I say that Shakespeare does not put that line out there in a flattering way. For those of you who would like to see, and why, I don't know, what it means when I say that, when I was talking about what I spent the weekend doing. I didn't know it at the time, but Agnes put some distance between me and her camera, phone, and got a snapshot of me wading into another portion of the acre, and it's up over on Facebook. Bob Kincaid, and you can go and have a look at it. Among other things, I love the the line that our buddy Texas, Tony put up there. A man, an acre, a weed eater, and his hillbilly rompers. Yeah, because like the guy romper is a big deal. Bro romper, don't know. But, no, I got some Liberty overalls. The original hillbilly rompers. Damn, they're comfortable, though. They breathe. A lot of room to move around. And with a white T-shirt, you don't get all burnt up, which is a real bargain, at least for me, who, gets sunburnt under a refrigerator bulb. But it's there. And in the corner of the photo, you can see one of my brush piles, of which there are several. Enjoy. Enjoy. So let's take a break and reboot things, because we got some more. We got some more in Monday on the way. And it might be good to, during the interlude, to go and lay hands upon, say, your hockey puck and your duct tape. What's the too much information part, Marty? You've never worn a pair of overalls? You don't know how comfortable they are? You should learn. One of these days, I'm going to get a second pair. Dang Skippy. And Anita. I need a big straw hat, too, because the ball cap with the red bandana hanging off the back is, I'm a little burnt. And I mean, knock wood. I'm not allergic to poison ivy, and I have been marching through it. Phew, nasty stuff. Wouldn't let Agnes get anywhere near it. So anyway, it is Moran Monday on the horn, and we are going to take a break. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Scott used a particular word in his conversation that immediately triggered something in the tired old mind of a DJ, and, well, yeah, here it is. See if you can figure it out. We'll be back.
I know, and maybe there is.
The Cardigans from way back in the 1990s and Love Fool, 1996 in point of fact, and it was that So I Sigh, it was that, yeah, the, that was what Scott mentioned, the sighing, the line about from Teach Your Children. My mind went there, God knows why. Okay, so it is 4 minutes past the hour. We've got about 53 or so minutes of conversation left in the program. If you would like to engage in said conversation, there are by which you may, well, three means. Three, not five. One, two, five. No, three. By which you may participate in the program. The stress line, it seems, is working much better these days. 304-663-4676, if you want to try that. 304-663-HORN. The other line works as well as it ever did, which is fabulously, 304-574-8178. And, of course, that's tied into the same computer that runs Skype, and the Skype line is, of course, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. So let's not wait around. Let's run over and check in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, it's Alma.
Hey, Alma, how are you?
Oh, hanging in there. I think what's going on is just the sickest thing I've ever seen.
Which part, or just all of it?
All of it. All of it. I'm just, you know, last time I talked to you, I was talking about depression.
Yeah.
I have PTSD. And I've had depression since I was probably about 10. Diagnosed when I was 28. And that's a hard life to try to live. And I told you my dad was a preacher.
Right.
And I lived with this doublespeak for years. You'd say one thing, and really it meant something else. Or you could never figure it out. So now, living in this environment where you can't, it's just like surreal. The shit they're trying to pull off here, and I have to engage in it because I am the kind of person that has to know how they're doing it. My husband doesn't want to know much about it because he just wants to, you know, just, he was laid off or retired out of his job about 3 years ago, and I was a homemaker for 18 years. You said you had at least an acre of land?
Yeah, this 80-year-old house sits on an acre of ground.
Okay.
For around here, reasonably flattish.
Yeah?
And
well, we're very flat and we're very sandy, you know, sagebrush, dry grass, cottonwoods. We bought this land 18 years ago, and my job was to develop it. So we've kind of made an oasis here. And just kind of get away from all this crap out that's out in the world. I guess what I'm saying is that all this stuff that's happening in this country and other countries is really making me sick again.
Oh, you're not the only one. I don't want to tell tales out of school, but one dear friend of the program has recently found herself in the hospital, and it was largely a function of just the constant day-to-day stress of dealing with the madness.
Yeah, it's not madness; it's insanity. Last December, I really got incredibly depressed, probably November, and I broke out in something similar to shingles. And I've been diagnosed with lupus. the sun sensitivity. I'm active, or used to be. I can't go out in the sun anymore. My husband just had surgery. I'm trying to take care of him. And my thyroid bottomed out. I mean, it's like one thing after another. And it's like I can hardly keep my head above water. But I wanted to share that with you because people like me are suffering. It's almost like I have to
Let me ask you, Elma, if you can draw a distinction. Is it a result of what is or what you fear may yet be?
It is what is, and where we are going backwards. I mean, the violence out there scares me. I told you I'm in a you know, I have a Hispanic husband and I'm a white woman. Our friends are Democrats, progressives, so I don't have much contact with Trump supporters. But I go out and I have to do the shopping, I have to take the trash out, I have to do all the responsibilities and take care of my husband, the cooking, all of that. And it's just really, it's driving me down. And I've listened to you, I've listened to other programs, and I guess I'm just calling to say, this stuff has to stop. People are killing each other. And Stephen Bannon wants there to be a civil war. He wants people to fight. He wants blood drawn.
Do you know why?
I
don't guess there's a right or a wrong answer to this, Alma, but it's because he buys into the notion that liberals and progressives are a bunch of weaklings who will simply collapse before the onslaught of right-wing bullying and brute force power politics and violence.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that this country is going to be taken over if you want me to look into the future. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think a lot of people are going to be hurt.
Well, they're trying to hurt a lot of people.
I was looking at CNN, and there was an advertisement. What the hell is people advertising to go against Comey? These right-wing idiots are taking money and paying to have these ads on TV to try to... And I think CNN is a relatively progressive station.
They're not when it comes to money.
None of them are.
Look at the thank Speaker Ryan for the American Healthcare Act ads. I'm sure you've seen some of those, and it features some Republican woman who says, "That Kenyan Muslim took away my health care, but now with the Affordable Care Act, I have hope again that someday I'll have health care." And I looked her up, and she's a real person who reached a degree of wingnut fame, notoriety, because she said she lost her health care under the Affordable Care Act. And so now they've made a commercial out of her in which apparently she still doesn't have health care, but she thinks that maybe with a bill that takes health care away from 23 million Americans and murders Medicaid in its sleep, that somehow she's going to be the one who comes out ahead in it. And for me, Alma, that is a microcosmic expression of the national right-wing id. Screw everybody else. What about me?
Yeah, and they get screwed, too. They get screwed, too. How can they be so stupid? I wanted to make a comment also about nursing homes, nursing centers. You're supposed to call them nursing centers, and the patients are actually residents.
Yes.
So you have to be politically correct about that. When I was in that industry, they wanted private pay. They wanted to get rid of the Medicaid. VA, so-so. I had a lot of VA patients. But the Medicaid, you bring in a private people and get rid of all the Medicaid. My boss told me that a woman who went from private pay, she had to go on to Medicaid, she said, get rid of her. If she can't pay, get rid of her. So, and I said, what am I supposed to do? She said, call a cab.
Jesus Christ.
This is down in Moore, Oklahoma, where that asshole was caught molesting children. So I found a place for her, and I took her to a new nursing center. That's the kind of shit I've had to live with. They spent so much money expanding and expanding, so the greed, they couldn't pay for coffee, they couldn't pay their bills. And I was an idealistic young woman, and I thought I was going in to help people. So I lasted 10 years, and I had to get out of it because I was coming apart. I couldn't stand up that kind of stuff.
It'll eat you alive.
It I think it did. And then I moved to New Mexico, and I've been here 25 years. My life got a whole lot better, but I live in pain 24/7 because I have osteoarthritis, and I was on painkillers for 12 years. You know, when you talk about people who are on the painkillers.
Yeah.
Thank God I never did die because they had me on the tranquilizers and the painkillers. So that's just, it's fascinating to me that the white population is finally getting the backlash that white people are dying because of this heroin addiction. Does that make sense to
you? Well, yeah, I mean, that's why it's a crisis now.
It is a crisis. When they brought it into the minority communities.
No, that's not a crisis. You've seen The Godfather, right?
Yes.
You remember the meeting of the families where they talk about the mob moving into the drug trade?
Yeah.
And the one crime boss says, "We'll sell it in the black community. They have no souls."
Oh, my God.
Remember that?
Yeah. That is so insulting. You know, the thing that pisses me off now is that Oliver Stone is trying to make Putin look like a human being.
Oh, look. I guess we figured out. I saw some of that. And, you know, look, I cut artsy types a little bit more slack because... maybe they don't make a business, make it their business to know as much as they can or need to know about the issues.
We
have certainly learned, have we not, what the agenda is over at NBC with Megyn Kelly.
Oh, my God. She's useless. What the hell is going on with NBC?
I'm frankly surprised that... Putin didn't mistakenly call her Monica instead of Megan. That was cheap.
He looked at a loss when she was interviewing Putin.
But it gets worse. Okay, so yeah, there she is normalizing Putin, who, despite the best efforts of people who think that he's a snuggly, cuddly, wonderful, lovable former KGB spook.
And a short men are not.
Well, you know, look, the pro-Putin crowd on the left is now finding itself, strangely enough, in bed with none other than George W. Bush, who said, hey, I looked into his show. We're show
He's mates. Not so bad, George W. He was one of the worst.
So, congratulations. You're now in bed with George W. Bush. Enjoy the time. But it gets worse. Because now her next big interview in normalization, I don't know if you've
is
seen
Alex
this or not,
Jones.
Is Alex Jones.
That is sickening.
And
oh
the victims of Sandy Hook are furious, and rightly so.
Exactly.
Because NBC doesn't need to do anything to normalize Alex Jones. He's been discredited. He's made a fool of himself for years. And, you know, people are finally picking up on that. So who rides to the rescue but Megyn freaking Kelly? You know, you can take the Fox News out of the attack blonde, but you can't take the attack blonde out of the, you know what I mean.
Oh, man. She's disgusting. You know, the thing that really is disheartening is that these people that are running for the Democratic seats, they're getting death threats. They're getting so abused that they're saying, I'm out. Not gonna run.
Well,
there was a woman and there was a man.
The story of the man goes back to April and has not had any further verification, so I'm leaving that story alone. But the woman in Iowa who said she was not going to run, she was canceling her campaign against Steve King, is very decidedly real.
She's very decidedly what?
Real. I mean,
real.
That's real.
So it's all, you know, it's trying to, do you believe what you read?
We're in an era where you have to read very, very carefully.
You have to be very, very careful.
And if you have not had the experience of that kind of close reading, it's kind of a learning curve. You can't make assumptions anymore.
No. And I think in the last week I've seen some articles that are like, like I read one that suggests Jeff Sessions wasn't going to testify. And I only saw that once. And all these other ones I've read that he is going to testify.
Oh, he's on the schedule for tomorrow.
Unfortunately,
I won't be able to watch. I'm going to be otherwise engaged at that hour.
Yeah.
But I'll try to pick it up on the way home and maybe watch the C-SPAN replay of it. But honest to God, do you expect anything out of that, Alma?
No.
He's going to sit there and say, "Well, I had no idea that I was supposed to list those Russian contacts that I had. Goodness gracious, my stars and goddess, I would have listed every last loving little one of them if and I had but known. But I didn't know, because, you know, I wasn't never nothing but an attorney general of a whole state for 2 years, and for several years the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of Alabama. I didn't know nothing about no laws."
You're good at that, Bob. What do we do to, you know, find some positive? What do we do?
As long as we can keep this little fun house on the air, this is a solution. This is part of the resistance, okay?
This is the
place where we come together, we talk about issues, we get infuriated, we get enraged, but we also laugh and we talk about how anxious we are for the tomatoes to come in. Or at least I do, because I am.
Yeah.
I saw something yesterday I'd never seen before. My wiggling pig has imported tomatoes from Ontario, and I got a little package of them. They were called brunettes or brunettas. They're a dark, dark red, almost brown, small tomato.
Oh, wow.
And they were yummy. I blasted a couple of slices with some Tony Sacheries, a couple of slices with some plain salt, and a couple of slices with some Lowry's seasoned salt. And, you know, just ate them and said, "All right, do your damnedest." And I'm apparently okay. So,
well, I hope so.
We'll add tomatoes to the list. Maybe I can. Tomato basil yogurt.
Oh, I'm a big yogurt eater and cottage cheese. I know your diet.
I joke about it. I don't hate it. It just, you know. I'm running out of stuff. I mean, I tried coffee yogurt the other day.
Of options. How about applesauce? I eat cottage cheese and applesauce.
Do some mandarin oranges every now and then. I can handle that.
Well, I don't do Twitter and I don't do Facebook, but I did log in to follow you somewhat on Twitter, and you look real different.
I've got a goal now. I'm going to get down into the size of jeans that I wore when I went to college.
Oh my gosh. You look good, Bob.
Well, thank you.
And I just want to tell you that I really appreciate your show and just that you helped so many people.
I hope so, because it helps me.
I had come to my wit's end, and I called a couple girlfriends this week, and I feel better. But it's just like, you know, you have to hold on to some kind of hope.
And sometimes hope is something along the lines of you have to sort of go and read the William Faulkner Nobel speech about man will not just survive, man will prevail.
Yeah.
And
stay in the moment.
Yeah, you got to stay in the moment. Don't let the bastards get you down. Laugh, dance, run, do whatever, you know.
And believe that karma works and these people get their due.
Yeah, and find the little
whatever
humor.
Whatever it is.
Find the little humor in the moment. I was on one of my I was in the one of my work on the computer segments, work on the computer, go to the yard, work on the thing. And Agnes walks in. She'd been outside and she said, "It's too hot." And so, because I am a burned out old DJ, I began singing Cool and the Gang's Too Hot to her. And I can't sing a lick, but it was just one of those little fun little moments, and it made me smile, it made her smile. And just being mindful of that of trying to find some humor, trying to find some happiness, goes a long damn way, Alma.
It sure does, because hope will prevail.
And remember,
I mean,
Donald Trump despises laughter. He despises happiness. That man has no concept of what real happiness is. All his ideas of happiness are wrapped up in money. And while, you know, let's be clear, the only people who say money can't buy happiness are people who already have money, okay, or people who never have any hope of any and are, well, and are kind of going the sour grapes route. But there's a difference between defining one's worth and sense of happiness by money as opposed to understanding that it happens inside. And that's, you know, in the activist community, there's a lot of talk about self-care and taking care of yourself and burnout. And you know, we gotta be conscious of self-care.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. You're one of the best.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I thank you for giving me time this evening.
Well, the time is what this is all about.
Well, you take care, Bob.
I'm going to try. You take care, Alma. It's awfully good to hear from you.
Thank you, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye.
Alma calling from New Mexico. And, well, we do. If we don't take care of each other and take care of ourselves, at least the Republican plan is for there to be no one who would. Die quickly. That's the Republican health care plan. So it's about 26 past the hour. Liz remains the only person to respond to Bob in Texas's challenge. It would be mighty helpful if that did not remain the case. And folks did respond to that challenge. It's a shame to leave one of those on the table. Hey, thank you, Kitty in Boston. Thank you for jumping in and standing shoulder to shoulder with Liz. We now have only $70 to go. Thank you, Kitty. No, what I was saying about Sessions' testimony tomorrow, there aren't going to be any bombshells. And it's going to be a whole lot of ex post facto
justification for, you know, the fact that he's a shit weasel, and that he has a strong fascist streak. Still, it'll be interesting. Like I said, I'll have to watch it in replay. Now, here's another. Here, on the other hand, is another little thing just to keep the pot stirred. You know that Wingnut website called Newsmuck? It's run by an alleged human being by the name of Chris Ruddy. And Chris Ruddy is a bosom pal of Comrade Kumquat. Well, Chris Ruddy went to the White House for a little shoulder rubbing today. With his buddy Trump. And he was spotted leaving the West Wing. And Judy Woodruff over at PBS interviewed Ruddy, who told her, and you never know how much of this is just trolling because they like to get the pot, like I said, boiling. But Chris Ruddy says that the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini is, quote, considering perhaps terminating Robert Mueller as special counsel. Let that sink in. Why would you do that? Because you're guilty. Because you're up to your eyeballs in corruption. Because despite the best arguments of the sparkly ones, there is a Russia problem. And as Keith Olbermann pointed out, based on Comey's testimony, on at least three occasions, Trump has made mention of the fact that, and I definitely never had anything to do with Russian hookers. I always assumed that I was being recorded. Three occasions, January 27th, March 30th, and June 7th. They keep bringing up the Steele dossier. Yeah, that almost sounds like guilt. And of course, that line that Trump gave to Comey, that Comey testified to. He said he had nothing to do with Russia, had not been involved with hookers in Russia, and had always assumed he was being recorded when in Russia. The Russian hooker thing is really deeply under his skin. Probably because it's true. Because he's nasty. That's him admitting that repeatedly throughout the 90s. Bragging about being able to walk into the dressing room at beauty pageants and there wasn't a damn thing the naked could do about it. I mean, there are women's... Do the men just... All right, girls, I'm coming in. I don't care if you're naked or not. Yeah, I'm the...
And of course, we know that their women's gymnastics in the U.S. was rocked by scandal, a way of sexual abuse. Trump, Trump's about what he thinks people have about him. If there are no Russia tapes, you say, hey, that's not true. If you didn't have a golden shower pee-pee party in the presidential suite at a hotel in Moscow, then you move on from it, and you know that's the end of it. Big damn deal. The only way you keep obsessing about it is if you know there's something there. Or hey, here's a thought. Pure speculation, I confess. What if there's something in the prenup between Marcus Aurelius and melanoma? What if she gets more money out of the divorce if he philanders and fools around and has hookers and stuff? What about that? Oh, it's a big day in Washington because melanoma and little Boron have moved into the White House. Did you catch that? I was hoping the kid would be wearing an I'm with Stupid t-shirt, but no such luck. But they're using the hashtag moving day, which I don't think has probably been used since the end of the Masters golf tournament in April. Melanoma said, so excited to be moving in. Yeah, I'll bet, Mrs. Douglas. I'll bet. But what if that's part of it? What if the prenup is part of what's got him shitting kittens with crocheted tails? Makes a little bit of sense, sort of, doesn't it? Kind of does. Oh, wow, great. Thank you. Thank you to Audwin. Thank you very kindly. We're now down to $35 to go. That is very, very helpful indeed and much appreciated. Meanwhile, Ivanka, who, if Donald Trump gets a second term, your first woman president will be Ivanka Trump in 2024, or Ivanka Kushner, I'm sorry. All she has to do is keep her hubby, Jared, with the lean and hungry look, out of prison. Yeah, I know. He ain't going to prison. He's thinking about firing Mueller. And what would the Republicans do? Just speculate here. What would the Republicans do if, in fact, he fired Robert Mueller as special counsel? Obviously, somebody has told him it is within his purview to do that. That, I guess, even a special counsel serves at the will and pleasure of the president. What would the Republicans do? Well, Maverick John McCain would run out to the first available television camera and say, my friends, it was clear Robert Mueller was not investigating the right subject because he wasn't investigating Hillary Clinton. So what's the point in paying him to do something that he wasn't going to do? Lindsey Graham would be shocked, I tell you, shocked. And as soon as he managed to get back up off the fainting couch there down at the ancient family estate of Smoldering Chode, well, he wouldn't do anything either. Devin Nunes, nothing. Trey Gowdy, nothing. Paul Ryan, nothing. Mitch McConnell, nothing. John Cornyn, nothing. Richard Burr, nothing. Susan Collins, radical centrist from Maine, nothing. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, nothing. And you think, no, you don't think this, but it's worth mentioning. They know this in the White House. They know this. The Senate is oh so close. It doesn't matter what the Intelligence Committee hears tomorrow from Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. Doesn't matter a hill of beans. Because the Republicans have control of what that committee does, and they're not going to do anything. And meanwhile, the rest of the Senate will go about, the Republican majority in the Senate will go about the business of figuring out a way to screw millions, tens of millions of people out of health care in this country, because the same way that the Trump regime knows that the Republicans won't do anything to Trump, the Republicans in the Senate know that the Trumpanzees and largely the American people won't do anything to them because they can't. There are only 9 tops Republican seats up for re-election, and not even one of them is in anything resembling an appreciable jeopardy. Al Franken recently described Ted Cruz as the kind of guy who microwaves fish at the office. And the people of Texas will return him to office for another 6-year term. Nobody's going anywhere in Arizona. Even the guy in Nevada. Uh-uh. Sorry, not in Wyoming. Not in Nebraska. Damn sure not in Alabama or Tennessee or Louisiana maybe. There's 9 states and they are all safe. So the Senate of the United States can do whatever they want to the American people and pay no price. Alabama, Texas, what have you, Tennessee, they don't give a shit about Medicaid because they never had the Medicaid expansion to begin with. They've got nothing to defend. Nothing to fight for. And so it's not just that the Republicans in the Senate are going to fuck the American people. The Republicans in the Senate are going to do that, give the American people a dirty Sanchez and a Cleveland steamer and a rusty trombone into the bargain. And then when they're done, they will urinate all over the American people because they can. Because we cannot exact any political price from them for what they do to us. Because we are in constitutional crisis and every mechanism inside the Constitution isn't failing, but has failed. not exactly hopeful on my part. But I trust you do not tune into this program for me to just sit here and tell you everything's okay, when you know with your own eyes and your own ears and your every other sense you have that everything isn't. That's why I did the story about the Julius Caesar play. Jesus Christ. New York City? Really? New York City? And Julius Caesar theater is under assault by the right wing in New York City? And the thing about the public theater is that Shakespeare in the Park is free, if I understand correctly. So it's not like ticket sales are going to serve as a bolster to the Delta and Bank of America money that disappeared. But a fascist state cannot tolerate any dissent from the cult of the dear leader. And here's the thing. If they can shut down a Shakespeare production in New York City, then they can do anything in this country, anywhere they want. That's what's at stake. And apparently, sources are to be believed, well, let's check in with Al Franken here. I mentioned him a minute ago. He was interviewed not too long back. On Tweety Matthews' program about this idea of Trump firing Robert Mueller.
That Trump is considering perhaps terminating Robert Mueller as special counsel. That came from Newsmax CEO Christopher Ruddy. And just moments ago, in fact, Ruddy was saying the West Wing. I'm joined right now by Senator Al Franken of Minnesota, author of the new book, Giant of the Senate. Senator, thank you for this. I don't know. This is such a fast-moving train. Mueller's only been in office a couple of weeks, and now the president's talking through Ruddy and others and through Newt Gingrich, of all people, about bouncing the guy. He's already moved on to Jaworski. He's already passed Archibald Cox.
Well, he's fired one. Comey, who was leading the investigation. Now we have a special counsel. Robert Mueller is widely respected. I can't imagine what he would do to legitimately open himself to being fired, frankly. And, you know, look.
Doing his job, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, Trump and the people around him are not acting like people who have nothing to hide.
That's true. But again, take into account, there's nothing anyone can do to stop them. Meanwhile, over on CNN, they got hold of April Ryan. And she said, her sources in the White House tell her, well, let's find out.
I think he's considering perhaps terminating the special counsel. I think he's weighing that option. I think it's pretty clear by what one of his lawyers said on television recently. I personally think it would be a very significant mistake.
Is there any way he would actually do it, April?
Well, let me give you a little bit of insight from inside the West Wing right now. One of my sources reached out to me just before we went on air, and they said there's mass hysteria in the West Wing about this. We don't know if it's going to happen or if it won't happen, but what we do know, if indeed the president does fire Mueller, it shows that he's impeding the process yet again. Some would even say it's obstruction of justice again. This process has to play out because of what he did with Comey. And also calling for the investigation. And there's a lot of smoke and there's a lot of alarm bells going off. Now the question is, where's the fire?
No, that's not the question. And it would be awfully nice if some member of the for-profit media could say the same thing that I just said a couple of minutes ago. There's no one to stop them doing what they want. Look it! The Trumpanzees are going to vote for Trump again in 2020, no matter what he does or does not do. He's worried to death about the PP tape showing up. But guess what? If the PP tapes were played on every network on cable, all the way down to Cartoon Network and Sprout, it wouldn't make a damn bit of difference to the Trumpanzees.
Oh, look. Look there, Marbling. Look at that. He's got so much money. He can go to Moscow and pay hookers to pee on the pillar where the Kenyan Muslim usurper and Michelle laid their heads. I tell you what, that's a man needs to be president. That's my kind of president's what that is.
Why won't they say that? Why won't they bring that up? Because it's not good for ratings? I don't know. And then finally this. The weirdest damned footage of any cabinet meeting ever. Trump had a cabinet meeting today, and apparently it was time to kiss the ring. Now, you'd think they'd never had a cabinet meeting before because, well, hey, look.
Most of you know most of the people around the room, but I'm going to start with our vice president. Where is our vice president? Our vice president. There he is. And I'll maybe start with Mike, and we'll just go around and just you name your position, and then we'll ask these folks to... go back and have a good day, and we're going to discuss our various reports. Mike?
Thank you, Mr. President, and just the greatest privilege of my life is to serve as vice president to a president who's keeping his word to the American people and assembling a team that's bringing real change, real prosperity, real strength back to our nation.
Thank you, Mike.
Mr. President, it's great to be here and celebrate this group. We are...
Yeah, Mushmouth Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III don't have to introduce himself. Everybody knows.
Receiving, as you know, I'm not sure the rest of you fully understand the support, but law enforcement all over America, they have been very frustrated. They are so thrilled that we have a new idea that we're going to support them and work together to properly, lawfully fight the rising crime that we're seeing.
Even though crime is going down, but never mind.
And it's able to serve you in that regard. You set the exact right message, and it's being responded. The response is fabulous around the country.
Great success, including MS-13. They're being thrown out in record numbers and rapidly. And they're being depleted. They'll all be gone pretty soon. So you're right, Jeff. Thank you very much. Alex?
Mr. President, I'm privileged to be here, deeply honored, and I want to thank you for keeping your commitment to the American workers. This week is...
This is the Labor Secretary.
A full schedule for you, focusing on the American worker. We're very excited at the Department of Labor. And the apprenticeship program that you're going to be announcing, I think, is going to make a real difference. So
I don't know how they can be excited at the Department of Labor. The Department of Labor hardly has any appointed staff, but never mind.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you. Mr. President, honored to be on the team. This last week, I had the great privilege to represent America at China at the Green Energy Ministerial.
That can only be Dancing with the Stars' own Rick Perry of Head Ranch, Texas.
Good timing. They needed to hear why America was stepping away from the Paris Accord, and they did, and that America's not stepping back, but we're stepping into place and sending some messages that we're still going to be leaders in the world when it comes to the climate, but we're not going to be held hostage to some executive order that was ill thought out. So my hat's off to you for taking that stand.
You know how you get an executive order that's ill thought out? Because it was thought out by a Kenyan Muslim you slurper, and it can't help but be thought out ill when it's a Kenyan Muslim you slurper doing the ill thinking. Yep. This is sickening.
We're sending a clear message around the world that America is going to continue to lead in the area of energy.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's a new day at the United Nations. You know, we now have a very strong voice. People know what the United States is for. They know.
Oh, it's Nimrata Haley.
What we're against, and they see us leading across the board. And so I think the international community knows we're back.
Thank you. It's true. Mr. President, thank you for the kind words about the budget. You're absolutely right. We are going to be able to take care of the people who really need it. At the same time, with your direction, we were able to also focus on the forgotten man and woman who are the folks who are paying those taxes. I appreciate your support and your direction in pulling that.
Yeah, we're going to take care of the people who really need it. I guess that substantially reduces the quantum of people who really need help. People who are on Medicare now, they don't need help. People who have health insurance now, they don't need help. They don't need health insurance. Fuck them. You know, because MAGA.
That budget together. Thank you, man.
Good morning, Mr. President. It's good to be back in the United States. I actually arrived back this morning at 1 o'clock from Italy, the G7 summit focused on the environment. And our message there was the United States is going to be focused on growth and protecting the environment.
Yeah, growth first, protecting the environment, not so much. This is Scott Pruitt, the EPA administrator, a wholly owned subsidiary of the oil and gas and coal industry.
Well,
good job.
Good morning, Mr. President. The intelligence community has never faced such a diversity of threats to our country in our lifetimes.
This is Dan Coats, the man who, the walking piece of human feces, who wouldn't even answer questions that were not classified in an open hearing last week before the Senate Intelligence Committee, and demonstrated a degree of what would have been in a functional Congress, a functional Senate, contempt of Congress, but for which the Republican majority, come on, everybody, did nothing.
We have men and women who are working 24/7, 7 days a week to make sure that we are on top of all these threats. It's a joy to be working with the people that I have inherited, and we are going to continue to provide you with the very best intelligence we can so you can formulate policies to deal with these issues.
Thank you, Dan.
Mr. President, it's a privilege to serve the students of this country and to work to ensure that every child has an equal opportunity to get a great education.
That's Betsy DeVos, who doesn't want anybody to get a good education because she is an enemy of public schools. But she's there to kiss the ring, and she gave, you know, a bunch of money to the Republican Party, so whatever.
And therefore a great future.
Yeah, and she's smiling like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush.
Mr. President, what an incredible honor it is to lead the Department of Health and Human Services at this pivotal time under your leadership. I can't thank you enough for the privilege that you've given me and the leadership that you've shown. Seems like there's an international flair to the messages that are being delivered. I had the opportunity to represent the United States at the G20 Health Summit in Berlin and at the World Health Assembly in Geneva, and I can't...
Jesus, this bunch has been embarrassing us all over the planet. How about that? And we haven't even gotten to Rince Priebus, who apparently tried to crawl across the table, give Trump a lap dance, and stick his tongue down his throat. Just one question. Has there ever been a meeting like this before? A staged meeting at which the cabinet members had to declare their undying devotion to Trump? I don't remember any, and I've been paying attention to politics for a right long time. Why would you need this? I'm running out of time, but I need to get this said. Because you want all these miserable lickspittles on record, on video, saying how awesome Trump is because somebody in the White House knows that the spirochetes are singing each to each, and it's getting harder and harder each and every day to keep him subject to gravity here on this planet. Okay? That's why. This is a blackmail tape. Well, what do you mean you want to write a letter saying the president is incapable of performing the duties of his office? You were right there saying how awesome he was. See how it works? Yeah. It is also a sign of an administration that is deeply insecure about its own competence. A regime that is insecure about its own competence. This is video footage that was supposed to reassure the Trumpanzees, but to anybody with a few firing synapses, it may be the most horrifying thing they saw or heard today, in the last week, or maybe in the last month. It's time for me to get out of here. Ran out of time, not program. Thanks very kindly to everybody who keeps the program going. Thanks for the challenge, Bob in Texas. Thank you, Kitty in Boston. Sorry, I closed the email too quickly. And Liz for jumping in. Thank you, Silent R. Lamar. And hopefully we'll get the rest of it knocked down between now and tomorrow evening. No program tomorrow evening, sorry, but I'll be back for prayer meeting Wednesday. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to our moderators, Sparky and Steve from Georgia Stan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox, Ben Birch. Thank you to the bravest, hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina. It's all for you. Good night, y'all.